The following is the class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 10th chapter, text number 50, given by His Holiness Srila Satsvarupa Das Goswami on March 19, 1992, at the Longdonville Temple, Trinidad.
Translation. Exalted persons like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma could not properly describe the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. May the Lord, who is always worshipped as the protector of all devotees by great saints who observe vows of silence, meditation, devotional service, and renunciation, be pleased with us. Purport. The Absolute Truth is sought by different persons in different ways, yet He remains inconceivable. Nonetheless, devotees like the Pandavas, the Gopis, the cowherd boys, Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan do not need to practice conventional processes of meditation to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For He remains with them through thick and thin. Therefore a saint like Narada, understanding the difference between transcendentalists and pure devotees, always prays that the Lord will be pleased with him. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sanyavani Kostatahi Satarani. This chapter is called Prahlad, the Best Among Exalted Devotees, and we're near the end of the chapter. And the praises of Prahlad and the narrations of Prahlad have been completed. Narada Muni was telling the narration of Prahlad Maharaj to Yudhisthira Maharaj. But when he actually finished, then he praised Maharaj Yudhisthira in one verse and said that you are very fortunate because what others could not dream of, you have. That is, Krishna is your friend, he always visits your house. He's so intimately related with you and your relatives. Sometimes he acts as your servant even to carry a message. Sometimes he's your guru. So Prabhupada comments why this praise of Yudhisthira suddenly came. And that was that Narada knew the mind of Yudhisthira and thought that after all these praises of Prahlad, Yudhisthira is very humble. And he may be feeling that he's not any kind of a devotee compared to Prahlad Maharaj. And so in case he was thinking like that, to encourage him, he's saying, don't feel sorry. So it is right to be humble always. And when we hear the praises of other devotees, that's one way that we become humble. When we hear what real surrender is, when we hear what real Krishna consciousness is, as exemplified in some notable devotee, it makes us, by comparison, think, I'm not a devotee at all. But the mind is very tricky, so we have to be careful that that doesn't turn into envy, that we begin to envy that devotee who's being praised. Narada Muni is a perfect saint. So he loves to praise devotees. He doesn't get envious. But he also likes to encourage devotees so that they don't become too disappointed when they hear the glories of great devotees and know that they are not much of a devotee at all. So we have to control our mind to get through these different situations in living with the devotees and praising Krishna and his great devotees. Then, and in fact we are all fortunate. We're not as fortunate as Narada or the Pandavas or Prahlad, but we are very fortunate how Krishna is in our lives, as we were able to share with the guests last night about Lord Chaitanya's movement and how we're able to participate in this and get free of sinful life. We are also very fortunate. So sometimes it is nice when we remind each other of this. So that's something you can think of doing every day. Try to encourage another devotee about their fortunate position. They may be feeling so many problems, but remind them of their good fortune, which is factual. Then, Yudhisthira, in another verse, the verse just before this one, today, he says that Krishna is the impersonal Brahman, because he's the source of that Brahman. But actually he's ultimately the Supreme Person. Everything comes from him, and the impersonal comes from him. So there are those kinds of transcendentalists. That's also not easy to attain by, as Krishna says in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, who are the better worshippers, those who worship the impersonal or your personal form? Krishna says the personal worshippers are better, but the others also, after austerity of meditation and seeing everyone equally and doing welfare for others, they also can come to me. Then following that statement about the impersonalists, Narada says, even great Vaishnavas, demigods, devas, Brahma and Shiva, they cannot fully understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is worshipped by transcendentalists by very long and severe methods of meditation and so on, but he's not understood completely. He's also approached in another way by bhaktas. So Prabhupada elaborates in the purport. This is the purpose of purports. Purports don't change the meaning of the verse, but the verses are like sutras. They have the meaning condensed, and things are hidden in there, or they're not stated directly, fully. So Prabhupada, in the purport, picks up on this distinction between the kinds of transcendentalists who approach the Lord. And he points out the devotees of Vrindavan, the gopis, cowherd boys, Madhya Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan do not need to practice conventional processes of meditation to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that the conventional methods would be considered renunciation and different kinds of meditation to control the senses. And these conventional methods, they also presuppose a relationship with God that he is very great and we are very small. And he is the Supreme Spirit. And he's inconceivable. But he can be reached by monena, samadhi, and so on. And in every religious culture, there's always a group of, in world religions, there's always a group of renunciates. They're not the ordinary congregation or parishioner, but they're very, very serious about attaining a God or the Absolute Truth in this lifetime. And they leave society and they practice austerity and some kind of prayer or meditation. And they may get revelation of God. So that's not... And then other conventional methods would be going to church, going to temple and mosque, and so on. But the residents of Vrindavan, their method is different. Yeah. Of course, they have no method anymore. Now they are Nitya Siddha, they are always with Krishna, or they've attained this perfection through the Nitya Siddha's association. And now their method of associating with Krishna is by personal loving relationship within his pastimes. And it is quite unconventional, the way they deal with Krishna. And Krishna is very happy to deal with them in that way. So all the pastimes of Krishna that we know, they all display these unconventional features. Because of the love, the intimacy, the reverence is slackened or completely done away with. There's the story of the time Krishna had a headache, and he asked Narada to, if you can get the dust of the devotee's feet, that will cure me. But when Narada went to the, we could say, the conventional devotees, conventional doesn't mean that they weren't very sincere devotees, but their method of understanding God is by the general religious path of worship, pujita, monena, samadhi, and so on. And God is worshipped with awe and reverence. So the proposition that they should take the dust from their feet, being just worshippers, servants of God, and put it on their Lord's head, that they couldn't accept that. Even among devotees, if I touch my foot to your body, realize that my foot is dirty, walking so many places, then I want to ask your pardon, that I please forgive me for touching your body with my foot. But if there is, when there is a relationship of intimacy, that may not be considered. Prabhupada, to exemplify this, he told a story once from his own life. He said he was talking, once sitting with some gentlemen, and his little baby son came into the room, and he threw himself on Prabhupada's lap, and that meant he put his feet on Prabhupada. So one of the gentlemen said, oh, to the boy, this is not right, he said. You should not touch a Vaishnava with your feet. So the boy said, what Vaishnava? He's my father. So that is the transgression of the proper convention, which cannot cheaply be transgressed, but when there's such an intimacy, then it can be transgressed. So most devotees said, if I gave you the dust of my feet for God's head, no, I'll go to hell. So then he went to the gopis, and all they had to hear was, Krishna has a headache, and immediately they were in anxiety. What? What has to be done? What can we do? Krishna should never suffer for a fraction of a moment. We think that Krishna does suffer, and we think about that, how when he walks in the forest, the pebbles must touch his feet, are so delicate, and we're meditating how those pebbles hurt Krishna's feet. It causes us great anxiety. We simply want Krishna to be happy. So Narada said, yes, well, he said, this headache can be cured if he gets the dust from the devotees' heads. So they didn't think that that there may be something bad for us if we do this. They just thought if this will cure Krishna. So they began to get immediately so much dust that Narada collected a big amount of dust. And there's some further narration about this, how this dust is collected and gathered, and we now, this is somehow connected with our gopi Chandan, Tilak. But then Narada was so impressed that these devotees were not worried about what happened to them. So he said, other devotees were afraid that maybe they would go to hell or something. And the gopis said, we are prepared to go to hell, but if we can relieve Krishna of his headache, that's what we want to do. So therefore, with a relationship like that, the idea of practicing meditation to understand God is just not, has no place, there's no need for it. And similarly with the cowherd boys, every morning they run over to Krishna's house early in the morning, wake him up, and they want to play with him. And sometimes before they go out, they have breakfast with Krishna and they joke and play. And they even wrestle with each other and fight. And Krishna gets defeated sometimes by Sridham. They brag and so many things. So they don't need the conventional methods. And what to speak of Mother Yashoda, she's superior to Krishna in her relationship, parent and child, and she can punish Krishna in love, and Krishna allows that and likes that, of course. Krishna likes these relationships better than the others. Yesterday morning, we brought this point up in passing. discussing Lord Chaitanya, Krishna said that it's been a long time since I appeared as Krishna and gave such sweetness as I give in Vrindavan. Now this is not present in the world. I would like to come again and give this. In the absence of this Vrindavan rasas, there is only religion by rules and regulations. And then Prabhupada says, too much emphasis on the greatness of God diminishes the affection. And it cannot be gained just by practicing the rituals, but only by spontaneous love. So then he came as Lord Chaitanya to teach that. They do not need to practice conventional processes of meditation to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he remains with them through thick and thin. This expression was used in the purport previous to this one, thick and thin. Prabhupada says in that purport, such was the intimate relationship between the Pandavas and Krishna. In the same way, a pure devotee of the Lord is always with Krishna through thick and thin. His way of life is Krishna. So thick and thin means good times and bad times. We all experience that, materially. Sometimes we have no money, and sometimes there's more money. Sometimes our health is good, sometimes health is not good, or relationship with our wife or family or husband or friends is very nice, and then sometimes not. Thick and thin. So with some relationships, when it gets too thin, then a relationship breaks. So in the most marriage vows, there's some phrase it's like in the West, they're promised that in sickness and health, in happiness and sorrow, we will always stay together. Because unless one vows like that or understands that, he may be a fair weather friend and just stay around when it's good times with your friend. Old song, nobody knows you when you're down and out. So then the friends leave when you don't have any money. Or some other misfortune comes to you, then your friends don't want to be seen with you. They're not very good friends. So that's not thick and thin. So what does that mean in terms of, for us, in our relationship with Krishna? And what does all of this mean? Which kind of devotee are we? Are we a conventional devotee, or are we a different kind of bhakta, like the residents of Vrindavan? We're certainly on the path of worship of Krishna in Vrindavan, but not on the path of conventional worship of God that he's impersonal or reached by austerities. Our method is to hear the pastimes of Krishna, very direct. And by doing that, we don't have to practice yoga. When Prabhupada was asked, why don't your students practice Hatha Yoga? He said, a very advanced stage of Hatha Yoga, out of 8 stages, it's like the 6th or the 7th, is when you finally meditate, dhyana. First you have to sit down, follow rules and regulations, nyam nyam, asana, sit down, pranayam, etc. And then, finally, you can meditate on the Absolute. He said, in bhakti, we begin on that stage, thinking of Krishna, by intelligently hearing the instructions of Krishna that you're not this body, and hearing about Krishna's activities. So even the beginning bhakta doesn't take those conventional practices, but he takes the parampara of bhakti yoga. Therefore Prabhupada said, bhakti yoga, even in the beginning stages as well as in the end, it can be considered as one, pure devotional service, just as a mango is one. In the first stage, it's not ripe and ready to eat, but later it becomes very nice. But still, it's a mango. So we will not follow another path. We will follow the path of chanting and hearing about Krishna, although in the beginning, it's not ripe. But we should yearn for the day when we can actually take pleasure in this, and we do that by following the rules and regulations very strongly and avoiding offenses. As for thick and thin, we should properly understand that whatever happens in life is due to our karma from past lives. We may be getting a little token reaction. And never think that my life is going badly now. I don't feel as affectionate or faithful towards Krishna or the devotees. Devotional service is not a process to bring you material prosperity. Rather, we read in Bhagavad Gita, this world is temporary and miserable. So taking to Krishna will not automatically make you more prosperous or something like that. Rather, it will bring you free from material life, ultimately to go back home, back to God. So Krishna says, I give the devotee what he needs, and if he's lacking something, I keep for him what he has. But how Krishna is going to do that, we can't determine or calculate. Krishna, you have to give me so much money this year, or you're not fulfilling what you say in the verse that you supply. But he supplies in his own way, in such a way that will best help bring ourselves to him. That's what Krishna is doing for us. He's attracting us to. So sometimes it may mean that for our own good, we get less money or we get less prestige. It's not necessarily always good to be rich and honored. You can do that, all right, but if you're getting rich and honored in devotional service and your bhakti is shriveling up and Krishna sees that and he said, this isn't good for my devotee. This particular devotee should not receive this. He's misusing it. I'll take it away. So that he can nourish the bhakti creeper at the roots again. Like Lord Chaitanya says, Ashleshava Paravatam Panastamam Adarshanam Mahato Karotuva Yata Tata Vidhara Lampato Matpananatas Tusa Eva Yapara. Krishna, even if you make me brokenhearted by not appearing before me, or you handle me roughly in your embrace, still, you are my worshipable Lord unconditionally. You can behave anyway, and I still love you. That is thick and thin. And when it's thin, we can see the special mercy there and appreciate that this is a good time for nourishing my Krishna consciousness. And when it's thick, then we'll be happy and see that Krishna is so kind. He's given us all this bounty of various kinds, healthy family, enough money, food and friendship. Everything is nice. This is all Krishna's mercy. In that way, we are always faithful to Krishna. Hare Krishna. So, any questions or comments about these points? Yeah.
One who's on the Rupa Noga platform, he doesn't have attachment to the rules and regulations. I just wanted to give it up, give an elaboration.
Well, yeah, what is that fault of being attached to the process itself, to the rules and regulations? I recall reading that also in the 11th canto. Do you remember what is stated there in the purport about that being attached? One place it's mentioned also is in the six items unfavorable to devotional service in Nectar of Instruction, Niyamagraha. Two meanings to Niyamagraha, according to the two different ways you pronounce it. So one meaning is to be or just attached to the rules and regulations. And the other bad thing is to give up the rules and regulations. Jai Gornitai, Jai Radagopi. So notice both things are unfavorable. If you think, oh, I don't need to follow rules and regulations, that's very unfavorable. But if you are too attached to them, that's also unfavorable. That means you don't see the goal, or you see a wrong goal. You may think by following the rules and regulations, I'll gain the heavenly planets, or people will see that I'm a very staunch devotee, that I follow the rules, and they will honor me. This is not the purpose of following the rules and regulations. And there may be other wrong motives in just following them for themselves, and forgetting the spirit of why we do it. So if a devotee gets obsessed in every little technical rule and doesn't appreciate, it's like somebody may be performing devotional service nicely, but they do something a little wrong, and then we don't even appreciate what they've done. We said, oh, this is not exactly right. Prabhupada says some of the Hindus in India who are very, they may not even follow the rules and regulations, but they will see that in ISKCON we do something that's not exactly done right according to some certain code or scripture, and they'll always find fault. Prabhupada says they don't know that in the West everything exactly cannot be done as it may be in India, but according to time and circumstances we do it. But the main thing is bhakti. So that would be, these are examples of being too attached to rules and regulations and not to the spirit of bhakti, preaching, surrender, doing the needful. Utility is the principle. The process of rules and regulations is meant to stir up that love, a spontaneous love of God in our heart. And when we reach that, then they're not so important, because the devotee does them anyway, not because it's a rule. If you only get up early because it's a rule, if you only come to Mangal Arati because the scriptures say so, if you only chant 16 rounds because you're supposed to, and you're afraid that if you don't, you'll go down in the cycle of life, this is not bhakti, bhava bhakti. It might be called vaidhi bhakti in lower stage, but where is the devotion to Krishna? So when you reach the higher stage, then you don't do things because of rules and regulations. But to set a good example, you follow the rules and regulations. But if some of the rules and regulations are not favorable to your spontaneous bhakti, then you don't have to follow those. But this is an advanced stage. Talking about Lord Chaitanya, we mentioned how his devotees, they didn't follow the rules and regulations for visiting the holy place when they went to Puri. They didn't fast for a day, and they didn't first go to see the Lord. They went straight to Lord Chaitanya. And without fasting, they took prasad from his hand. So then Gopinath Acharya said to the king, there are two kinds of devotional service. One is by rules and regulations, and one is spontaneous love. The devotees of Lord Chaitanya are on the platform of spontaneous love. So then the king considered himself educated. Oh, I thought there was only one kind of religion, following rules and regulations. So these devotees are very special. That's the meaning. Yes?
This book of karma, right, action and reaction, and you say that you should accept everything as reaction to the past activities. So how should we appreciate that? How could we tolerate that? Like, for instance, if someone just come and beat up on you,
well,
it's karma. How should I appreciate that?
Well, if someone attacks us or attacks a property or whatever, we can defend ourselves, especially, and our reaction would be, as a devotee, this is Krishna's property, I'm using this in Krishna's service, and I'm Krishna's devotee, I'm like an instrument too. If I get put out of commission, and won't be able to serve Krishna. You have no right to do this, so you can defend yourself. But this point you're raising, it's like some philosophers or religionists, they criticize karma, the followers of karma, meaning ourselves or the Indian philosophy. They say, oh, these people believe in karma, therefore they're fatalistic, and they don't want to improve anything in the world, they don't do anything, because they say, oh, everything is karma, everything is fate, so there's nothing you have to do. But that's not... We certainly believe that these things are determined by past activities, but at the same time, we work to improve our devotional condition, because the karma can be changed. And if you surrender to Krishna, the karma can be taken away. But until I am perfect, I'll still get some token karma from the past, at least. Therefore, I wasn't meaning to say that devotees get full karma, but they may get some token from the past. So as far as when you mentioned being beaten, I thought of in the first canto, it's mentioned that when the bull is being beaten by the Shudra, who is Kali, personified, and King Parikshit said, who is doing this beating? He said, I can't exactly say who's doing it. There are different opinions, but I think it's coming from my karma. And then Prabhupada mentions, and the verses mention, that you should see someone who's coming to do, who does evil on you, he's just an agent. He's not really doing it on his own as the doer, but he's carrying out, through the intricate laws of nature, the karma that you have to get. If it's karma that because of something I did in the past, somebody is going to come and hit me on the head because I hit so many people on the head, then who's going to do it? So someone's going to have to be the carrier of that karma. And it's so intricate because he's committing bad karma himself. But in terms of me, he's just an instrument that I have to receive that karma. So I personally have nothing against him. Because it had to come to me. He just happened to be the one who delivered it. And that relieves us from this like great hatred at that person that now I have to retaliate and kill that person because he hurt me. So the revenge impulse is not strong. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't defend ourselves and defend Krishna's property and certainly defend Krishna's devotees. And if you think that, no, I don't believe in that, I believe that person who did the wrong, he's the one who actually did it, then the purport says that, then you're as wrong as he is. Yeah.
To answer that, like for instance, when you call premeditation,
crime. Yeah.
Like if you didn't respond towards the activity, like somebody, or it offend you or offend our brother, friend, and you would not be able to respond at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
How does premeditation on this?
You mean you respond later?
Yeah. Or was,
well, we're getting into criminal law now. And actually, but the Vedic kings, they used to have to deliberate on these things. And there is something to that in Krishna consciousness too. Like a crime of passion is considered not as bad as you go to court and you say that I caught this man with my wife and I killed him on the spot. So it's not as bad as if you made a whole conspiracy and a plot to kill that man. Because they say, well, he was a victim of passion. He has to be given some punishment. But it may not be murder in the highest degree. And what to speak of if you kill somebody with your car, you had no intention to kill them. But still, it's manslaughter. So the more that you meditate on doing the evil and actually do it, then that's worse. But that's ordinary law and ethics. But it applies to Krishna consciousness too. The more that we meditate on some ill act and do it, then the more we are to blame. And the less we are justified in doing something, the more there's some material motive. Yes.
I had asked the Guru about karma. He speaks about rules and regulations early on. So the question is that these great devotees, I know, they always at Krishna all the time. So they find, like in Srila Prabhupada, he, you know, chanted so many wrongs also on his Deepa. So the question is really that if they're always thinking of Krishna, then how come
if they're always thinking of Krishna, how come they what? Chant on their beats?
Yeah, they're
using
the beats. And
they like to chant on their knees. Do you think chanting on bees is a punishment? That when I get to be a real devotee, then I can give up this practice. But they not only like to say Krishna, but they like to finger the bees and say them like that. They don't give up. Prabhupada, remember there was one godbrother of Prabhupada. Many years ago, he came to America as a sannyasi, but he had no kunti mala and no beads. The devotee said, "Why, you don't have the beads?" He said, "I am in the Paramahamsa stage. At this stage, you don't use these anymore." So he went to Prabhupada, and he said, "No, Paramahamsa, he continues to keep these things." So it may not be necessary. Yeah, he doesn't like, "Oh, I have my neck beads on, I'm a devotee." So for a neophyte, just by having neck beads on, he may decide not to go into the, you know, he's thinking, "I think I'll go into the discotheque and I'll take some intoxication. Oh no, someone will see me with my neck beads on. I better not do it." So it just barely saved him from committing sin, or Yamaraj was going to take him, but he saw the neck beads. So the Paramahamsa, neck beads or not, he's pure devotee and he's always going to do the right thing. And even if he doesn't have his beads, there's no problem, he's going to be able to think of Krishna. But, for example, to set a good example, he keeps them. And also because they're part of the Vaishnava paraphernalia, he did them when he was a neophyte, and he continues to like to do them. He's attached to chanting on his beads. If he doesn't chant on his beads, that's all right too. But he does chant on his beads, because it would easily be taken as a wrong example. But if we see Lord Chaitanya or some person like that not chanting on beads, then we don't think, "Oh, he's not thinking of Krishna." But generally they do, even at that stage. Yes.
I am still somewhat baffled in the answer that they give to Abhi Kavi questions with the Tirinthari RC. Like, for me, you know, personally, like, I get up, you know, to do this worship for the Lord, but I don't get up on time. But I feel obligated to get up and do it. So, I'm baffled that, you know, exactly, obviously, it won't be like some spontaneous love. At least I don't think so. So I can't rationalize it in my mind why I feel obligated to do it, and I do not feel obligated to do it on time, according to the rules and regulations. Could you explain that?
Well, you have, first of all, I want to say that in the absence of spontaneous love, the obligation to follow the rules is all we have, and so it's very important. It's our life. So we're very fortunate if that impression has entered into our life, that I must do it because my guru said so. And also, what kind of force is behind that? It's not, there is no force, actually. It's all voluntary. So there is a kind of love, even in the beginning. But it's not prominent. The prominent thing is the duty. But until you have love, duty is very important. So it's like the foundation to the house. So you're saying that you have a sense of duty that you must go to Mangalarti, but not a sense that you should be there on time. So it means that your sense of duty is not that developed. You have some, but not. It's like kind of a quirk that you think you should go, but you don't think you have to go on time. You should go on time. Have you read? There was one devotee who was actually a temple president, and he confessed to his friends that he was only chanting 14 rounds. He couldn't finish his rounds. So the devotees told Prabhupada, and he said, "Well, what's the problem?" He said, "He's chanting 14. Why can't he chant two more?" So it's like, it's important that you go on time, so why don't you just add that to the conviction you already have that I should go. If you think, "I want to go for Krishna's sake," but then Krishna doesn't like it. If you have an appointment with someone and you always go late, in some cultures it's fashionable to go late, They don't. If you say, "I'll meet you there at 8 o'clock," they come there at 8:30 or 9 o'clock. Sometimes we call that Indian time, or maybe it's Trinidad time too. But it can be disappointing to a person who is waiting to see you, and Krishna, his aarti always begins on time, and so if you're not there, you should say, "This is not nice. He always sees me coming late." So if you're doing so much, then why not add the rest? Surrender to that little bit more. There's some example that a man has bought an elephant from another man, so he had to pay a big sum of money, and he agreed, and the deal was made. He paid for the elephant. Now the man says, "Well, why don't you also buy this goad, the rod for the elephant?" And this is just a small item. And they get into a big quarrel about that. I mean, it's, "No, it's too much. I don't want to buy it." "No, you should buy it." "No, but it's too much." So if you purchase the elephant, why are you getting into a quarrel about the goat? So you already want to be a devotee, and you surrender in so many ways, but you don't come to Mangalarti on time. It's silly. Some lady had a question. Well, it's very limited, the force. The force is, of course, it's limited to whatever you can convince that person by preaching. We should not try to intimidate him, certainly by physical threat, or even threat of damnation, that you're going to hell or something like that, or we start offending that devotee. If actually the devotee repeatedly does not do his service, then he shouldn't. The service is a privilege, so then that service should be taken away. He shouldn't have that service. At that time that Prabhupada was in the temple, and he went and took Charinamrita, and it was salty instead of sweet. He said, "Who does this? Who makes the Charinamrita?" And one devotee raised her hand. He said, "Why did you do this?" And she said, "I don't know." And then he turned to the temple leader and he said, "Get someone responsible to do this." So it's a privilege, and there's no force actually, except to try to preach to that person and convince that person with logic, the force of logic, that you should, "Prabhu, if you don't do this on time, the temple will suffer, the deities will suffer. Don't you want to advance in Krishna consciousness? The scriptures say that you should do it nicely, and you're not doing it nicely. So give him scriptural evidence and logic and so on. Reasoning, but that's it." And you say, "Well, and if nobody wants to serve, then we can't force them to serve. We have to make it appealing, and so that people will desire to serve to improve themselves." So the successful manager or preacher is one who, by his preaching, he makes the services sound attractive, and the devotees want to do them. And if they're negligent in their duties, then still he gives such nice instruction that the devotee feels that, "I feel bad that I didn't do my service. I want to do my service now." You can judge by the result. If he's trying to force devotees, they get more and more uptight, then the preaching is not successful. I'd like to end here then. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.